This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Our radio program is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and our website. With just days to go before President-elect Donald Trump is inaugurated, Russia's government has invited Trump's team to an upcoming meeting in Kazakhstan over the Syria war. Russia has played a major role in the Syrian crisis, openly siding with the government of Bashar al-Assad, providing weapons and dropping bombs. Meanwhile, CNN is reporting that the Pentagon is currently preparing plans for the Trump administration to consider that would include aggressive attacks on ISIS, including sending U.S. combat troops into Syria. Given the alliance between Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin, will we see a future U.S. foreign policy squarely in line with Russia and Assad, despite the Assad regime's documented war crimes? Joining us to help answer that question is Rhys Erlich. He's a veteran foreign correspondent, author of a number of books about the Middle East and the War on Terror, including Inside Syria, the backstory of the civil war and what the world can expect. He's a frequent guest on this program. Welcome back to the show, Rhys.
My pleasure, as always.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, in terms of what's happening on the ground in Syria, it seems as though there's never good news coming out of this horrific war-torn state. What is the latest situation, particularly in Aleppo, which has been the focus of the worst fighting, the biggest barrage of bombs from foreign countries? We're supposed to be in the middle of a ceasefire, but I understand there's a lot of violations of that ceasefire.
Yes, as your listeners and readers know, the city of Aleppo was recaptured by the government a number of weeks ago after a horrific air bombardment by the Russian Air Force. And there's a sector of Aleppo that's controlled by the Kurds, which was not involved in the fighting. So that is still continuing to function. But the big problem with the ceasefire that was called by the side backed by Russia and Assad is the rebel groups who did not sign on to the agreement are continuing to fight. And when they continue to fight, then, of course, Assad and the Russian Air Force continue their bombing. And it's the problem that's plagued U.S.-sponsored ceasefires, and it's the same problem that's plaguing the Russian ceasefire now, which is that you have to have at least the major rebel groups on board, the non-extremist groups, in order to make a ceasefire work, let alone have political negotiations.
Has the recapture of Aleppo done anything to curb the Islamic State, specifically ISIS, given that that has been the U.S.'s stated enemy?
Actually, no. The Islamic State was not a factor in Aleppo. It was groups affiliated with Al-Qaeda, such as the Islamic Conquest Front or the Levant Conquest Front, and another group called Ahrar al-Sham, another extremist group. They were the ones that were strong in Aleppo. The Islamic State actually took advantage of the fighting in Aleppo to recapture Palmyra, which is a city in the east known for its historic ruins and sites. It was a big tourist location, spot at one time. They retook that while the fighting was going on in Aleppo. So if anything, the fighting in Aleppo allowed the Islamic State to make an advance.
What about the fact that this Russian-sponsored series of talks that's set to take place in Kazakhstan has essentially deliberately left out the United States, meaning left out the Obama administration, and now the Russian government has extended an invitation to the Trump administration? Certainly the timing is quite telling, but even the fact that there was no invitation to the U.S. until now seems to be a direct snub of Obama.
It was, and it was a pitch, I think, a Hail Mary pass, if you will, towards the Trump administration, hoping that somehow they would be more favorably inclined towards these peace talks. The real critical difference in these talks is that Turkey is involved. Turkey had been allied with the U.S., had been a supporter of the Free Syrian Army and later various extremist political Islamist groups in Syria, and they've now backed off from that position, and they're trying to cut a deal with the Russians, basically, that makes the Russians will ignore the attacks on Kurds if the Turks side with Russia and Assad. That's the deal in the making. And we've seen some indications of that taking place on the battlefield. Even so, that doesn't mean that these peace talks are going to succeed. In order for political negotiations to work, A, you've got to have the people on the ground who are actually doing the fighting, who have some kind of support or ability to fight. And B, they've got to be willing to actually make concessions, compromise, keep what happens to the Ba'athist Party, what happens to the extremist groups. And those are all very, very naughty, naughty political problems.
What about Iran? Where does Iran stand? This is a government that has also backed the Assad regime. I understand that they are going to be involved in the talks next week.
Yes. Yes, they were excluded from the talks sponsored by the U.S. and the U.N. earlier in 2016. They are part of these talks. Of course, they have troops on the ground. They have advisors. They're providing militias from Iraq and Afghanistan that they're backing are also fighting in Syria. So they are a significant player on the ground as supporters of Assad. And they're there in hopes of trying to obviously get a political settlement that will be in Assad's favor. Again, no more likely. Their presence, it was kind of a given that they were aligned with who they're aligned with. The real question is whether some of the key rebel groups will participate.
Reese, let's step back and look at what the Obama administration's legacy in Syria has been. It's been a complicated one. President Obama had been characterized as having really kind of held back from entering the Syrian war, despite a lot of pressure from even Congress, his own government, and other governments for a long time. With the emergence of the Islamic State, the sense was that the president reluctantly brought the U.S. into this war, but has tried to thread the needle in terms of not wanting to appear to be allied with the Assad regime because of its documented war crimes. So it's been a very complex foreign policy. How would you assess that? I mean, has the past few years of Obama's foreign policy in Syria been complicated, not really clear?
No, it's been clear and it's been awful. It's been imperialism light, if you will. He tried to re-invade Iraq with 5,000 troops. You mentioned earlier that they're now sending combat troops into Syria. They've had combat troops in Syria since 2014. They've increased the number.
But when you say combat troops, are you talking about U.S. troops fighting on the ground in Syria?
Yeah. In 2014, when the bombing started in September of that year, they had U.S. Troops spotting for airstrikes. They weren't in large numbers, but they were training the Kurds and helping direct the U.S. airstrikes.
So they were labeled advisors, I imagine.
Yeah, they were. First of all, at that time they weren't acknowledged at all, and then later they were acknowledged as being advisors and trainers. And then, as recently maybe 4 or 5 months ago, they were talking about combat troops. They've now got roughly 500 troops. Some combat, some training. But, you know, if you've got body armor and assault rifles and tanks and other equipment, you're combat troops, whatever they're called. So it's simply been a myth that Obama hasn't been involved. Or I think it's true he was a bit more reluctant than, say, Bush, but that's a pretty low bar when you think about it.
And he hasn't, as far as I understand, the U.S. has not so far been at least openly coordinating with the Syrian government on its airstrikes?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So the official line out of Washington was that the U.S. is not going to get involved in the civil war in Syria, but it's going to fight ISIS. Okay, so it's true. The bombing has been going on against the Islamic State, and sometimes against the Al-Qaeda affiliate. But the our U.S., both the Pentagon and the CIA, have been arming rebels. They've been supplying them with weapons. They've been doing everything they could to overthrow Assad since roughly 2013, at least, and probably before that. So the Obama administration, the criticism of him is that he didn't do enough. He didn't send in enough arms. He didn't train enough rebels. He didn't bomb enough. But, you know, the U.S. has limited capability. Unless the U.S. is going to go in and occupy Syria like it did Iraq and stay there permanently and spend $1 trillion and put, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 troops there permanently, you're not going to win the Syrian civil war. And that's the simple reality of it. And frankly, Trump is facing the exact same problem for all his bellicose rhetoric and all his toying with Putin and so on. He faces the same contradiction of a weakened U.S. empire in an area of the world that doesn't want U.S. occupation anymore.
Right. And Trump, of course, was a very strong critic of Obama's policies in Iraq and Syria, blamed the Obama administration for empowering ISIS, strengthening ISIS. Interestingly enough, if Trump, who is pretty open about siding with Russia, does enter the Syrian war, is it going to go from what you were saying, Obama's imperialism-like to straight-up imperialism with direct coordination with the Assad regime, fighting alongside Russia, basically siding with a known dictator who has documented war crimes?
I don't think he's going to do that because the whatever his isolationist and populist rhetoric might be, he's filled his cabinet with hawks who are anti-Iran and anti-Russia. And there's no way that his Secretary of Defense is going to agree to put troops on the ground to fight, to help support Assad.
Let's talk about who's likely to be there.
It's going to be the opposite, if anything. They're going to arm rebels. They're going to pump more money into rebels. They're going to expand the bombing and accidentally kill a few more Syrian soldiers. If the escalation takes place, it's going to be against Assad, not for him.
Let's talk about who's likely to be the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson. He's been tapped to be the new head of the Pentagon, is somebody who basically has some strong ties, he did his company that he was an executive of, did business with Iran and Syria and Sudan, even while those countries were under U.S. sanctions. It doesn't seem to be somebody who has much respect for international law. Is this reminiscent of the Bush administration in terms of putting in someone with deep ties to the oil industry in charge of foreign policy?
There's some similarities there. Remember, Dick Cheney was a CEO of Halliburton, the oil pipeline company. On the specific issue of sanctions, I think the U.S. corporations take one stand when they're fighting for their immediate economic interests. He's indicated that he will support at least some of the sanctions. I suspect more against Iran than Russia, because like Halliburton, opposed the sanctions as well, and Dick Cheney became a big advocate of sanctions later. So there's a difference between the political and the economic wings of the ruling elite in this country, sometimes on those kind of questions. But I think we'll have to see where Tillerson falls. I think the key factor, the key issue to look at will be Iran sanctions and the nuclear deal with Iran. And I think that's a key question for Trump as well. If they try to start nitpicking and claiming that Iran is not living up to the agreement and threatening to renew new sanctions, that's going to be the indication of a big flare-up and a big hawkish and, I think, self-defeating policy. If they allow the nuclear agreement to stay in place without making a big deal about it, that would be another indication. So watch carefully the statements in the weeks ahead about Iran.
Right. So Trump himself, despite all of it's easy to sort of criticize from the sidelines, but he himself is going to be walking into a complex situation where he has made statements on the one hand supporting Russia, on the other hand criticizing the Iran nuclear agreement. Meanwhile, Russia and Iran are allies in the Syria war, so he's sort of playing both sides, and as if the situation in Syria wasn't complicated enough. And so if Trump is surrounding himself with members of a cabinet that are anti-Russia and anti-Iran, how do you expect, just let's go back over what you were mentioning earlier. A foreign policy in Syria under Trump would mean fueling the rebels, dropping bombs, but which rebels, right? And will the focus on the Islamic State remain a main goal?
Yeah, well, you have touched upon the key contradiction, which is the U.S. claims that it supports democracy in Syria and supports moderate rebels. The problem is, if you look up the moderate rebels the U.S. supports, they have no popular support in Syria. So I suppose the generals in that dominate Trump's cabinet could convince him that if you pump more money in, you'll find these rebels and you will end up getting rid of Assad and thwarting the Iranian aggression in Syria. That's the way they're going to oppose it. And they're going to say, well, right now we have nothing to negotiate with Putin about because he's on the military upswing. So we need some leverage. They're going to talk about U.S. leverage against Putin. And to do that, it involves more bombing, more aid to these mythical rebel groups. And in reality, it will make the situation much, much worse. That, I think, is the likely scenario. It is possible that Trump's populist isolationism will lead him, in the case of Syria, to pull back and allow Russia to support the Assad regime and reassert at least some control over the country. That is possible. But at this point, I don't see any indications of that actually being done.
Well, Reese, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. For our Los Angeles audience, I know you're going to be speaking at the UCLA Law School this Thursday, January 19th, from 12:15 to 1:30 p.m. That's at an event sponsored by the Near East Studies Center. Again, that's at UCLA Law School. And Reese, you're also going to be touring other parts of the country later this year?
Yes, I'm starting January 30th. I'll be in Boston and Amherst, New York, Raleigh, North Carolina, and Atlanta, talking about inside Syria, the backstory of the civil war, and what the world can expect.
And details are available on your website?
Yes, reeserlich.com. It's spelled reeserlich.com.
We'll post a link to
that. And there'll be a list of all the speaking engagements and, of course, how to get the book.
And we'll post a link to that from our website later today as well. Thank you, as always, Reese, and good luck on the tour.
Thank you so much.
My guest is Reese Erlich, veteran foreign correspondent, author of a number of books about the Middle East and the War on Terror. And he mentioned his latest book, Inside Syria, the backstory of their civil war and what the world can expect. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.